Hello, everyone, and welcome to this Charity Digital podcast. We hope you are having a splendid day. Your host for today's podcast shall be myself, Nick Wyatt, Growth Marketing Executive here at Charity Digital. And we have huddled around our computers today to partly virtually come together to discuss the written word, which when put into sentences can form something rather brilliant: blogs. It is a truth universally acknowledged that an organization in possession of a website must be in want of a blog. Everybody seems to blog. It is even possible that too many people blog. And an abundance of blogs from organizations of all shapes and sizes means that your blog gets lost amid the vast abundance of noise. Now, we want to cut through that noise. We want to boost the volume, increase the harmonics, run it through some big speakers till we are the only ones that people can hear. In short, we all want our blogs just to be really, really good. So we are here to help. Today's podcast will be an overload of information on how to create a successful blog. My elite expert blog writing panelists, they are going to discuss picking the right content, choosing the right medium, how to use effective imagery, exploiting marketing and SEO, creating a content strategy, adopting a style guide, writing in clear, concise prose, perfecting your proofreading, and deep breath, so much more. So let's meet this A team of experts. I am joined today by Charity Digital's brilliant Ashley Fontaine, our marketing program manager, and joining us once again, the wonderful Laura Stanley, our content writer, and the sometimes wonderful Johan Mark Jones, our big cheese content editor. Hello, A team. How are we doing?
Hiya.
How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. So let's start with the big question that's on everybody's mind. Why bother with a blog? We'll start with the big cheese. Johan, kick us off.
Yeah, I think it's an important question. We did a podcast a while ago on podcasts, and I think we sort of discussed the same thing, which is people feel almost obliged or compelled to have a blog or a podcast when really, if it's not serving any purpose, then you shouldn't bother with it. I think that's especially true for smaller charities. Just think about the goal of a blog. And that can be various things. I mean, a blog can strengthen community, it can generate traffic, raise awareness. You can pop donate buttons, and people successfully raise a lot of money using just blogs, talking about their cause and building trust with their audience. If you have an expert voice in your team that could actually, it's not, obviously charities aren't all about raising money, it's also about helping service users. So that could be a reason, or to attract volunteers and so on. There's lots of reasons to have a blog, but that shouldn't justify it unless that reason is like consolidated within your charity and certain. So the first thing to do before you start, the first thing before you even put pen to paper or do anything, is to question why and what value it'll bring. And you should quantify that, you know, think about exactly what the reasons are, look at data. And then that's a continuous question you should ask yourself. So I don't think it starts with just producing your first blog. You should look at your blog 10 blogs in, look one blog in, look after a year. Has it performed? Has it done anything for you? Because I think we'll talk about this later, but writing isn't easy. Writing well is very difficult and takes years of practice. And having a good blog takes years of practice. And it takes a lot of work. So if you are not justifying it through one of those means over any time span, or even if you can justify it and then suddenly, for example, donations start dwindling, then you need to get rid of it. It's a weird thing to start with, saying don't blog on a blog, a podcast about blogs.
Yeah.
My advice. Make sure you've justified it and make sure you have resources and capacity to do it and perform it properly.
I agree. I think capacity, especially, because if you obviously have a goal in mind for this blog, which is great, but it's like if you don't have a team or even a one person who's consistently managing it, it's not going to reach that goal because you want it to be consistent. How are you going to kind of raise awareness continuously? Or like you said, kind of have those generate traffic and donations if you're not being consistent. So capacity is definitely, it's definitely a key one to remember.
Mm-hmm. I would say that you need to think about in terms of value for your audience and what you want to deliver to them, whether that's news, case studies. I think Johan's completely right. It's a way to build trust with your audiences. So you're basically cutting out the middleman, because every input of information on your blog they're getting through you, it's your voice. And it's a way to make that more informal if you want to, or just make sure it's you using your voice, as I said. So I think that blogging is a way of getting content that's authentically you. So make sure it is you, but make sure in that respect that it's also serving your audiences, because only you know them.
Yeah, and there's something to be said about, I guarantee you have so many brilliant blogs. I don't know, I think we've all been on the internet and you stumbled across a brilliant blog and it's got very little traction. You go, wow, this person can really write and they're super informative. But if you don't have the means to share that and get it out there, then again, it might not be worth you pursuing a blog. If you don't have a strong social media following that's going to engage in it, if you don't have the marketing capacity or potential. So again, you just got to think about all variables. I'm not going to dig too deep into marketing because we did have a marketing podcast about four podcasts ago. So listen to that if that's your interest. But
devil's advocate, though. I don't think, don't expect the world like you, to read your blog, but if the people that you care about reading your blog, so all the people in your community are reading it, that's good. It could be 200 people or less, but as long as they're reading it and taking the information in, that's the main thing. So I think look deeply into your data.
Yeah, that's true. It's about who is, you're right, it's who is reading. I guess I'm saying have balance those things. So balance the amount of time it's going to take you to do a really good blog with the amount of reach, what value it's providing your users and your audience, and justify it with those two things in mind. And that might be that you're providing huge amounts of value to 10 people, in which case it's likely that you should do the blog. It could mean you're providing very little to no value to a million people, which actually means you probably shouldn't do the blog. Balance those things together, I think.
Yeah,
I think finding a purpose for the blog and is the key. I guess that's kind of summarizing what you've all said is the key thing. If you've got something, even if it doesn't get the much traction, that has value to somebody, I think it's worthwhile. I know that I used to always do blogging to when I used to work in the horticultural industry. I had to write blogs about how to grow flowers and how to grow foods and such. And it was basically just almost like manuals that went along with what we were doing at the time. So there was a lot of value in it, even if we only had a few hundred reads on each one of them. It was that we were kind of supporting elsewhere in the organization, which is why they were so valuable to that organization. Okay, so now we know why to blog. How do charities start, and you know, what kind of things should they think about, what sort of things should they cover when doing so?
They need to think about what they want to say, where their voice is relevant. Who is the blog for and what do they want those people to know? I was literally just writing down the BBC's principles, like the inform, educate and
inspire.
So I would suggest it's again what you just said, Nick, find your purpose. That's the best place to start, and then once you found that voice, it's then finding a way to who will write it, you know what I mean.
You made a kind of point that kind of triggered me when I was thinking about our audience. So yeah, like who are you writing for? Like that's also one of the key things that you need to remember, because how you write this, it really depends on how it will be received by your audience, depending on who they are. Because you're going to have to consider like form and kind of like how the style of the writing. You're going to have to consider like whether you want to use images or not, because a lot of people nowadays, we're all strong visual learners. So you might not want to sit down and read a full load of text, but you might have an audience that want to, depending on their age demographic potentially. But yeah, audience is definitely a really big point to consider for sure.
I think audience, something Laura said actually was strong, and something with Ashley said. Two things to start. I think, yes, the first thing to do is consider your audience. Then you need to consider who's writing it, which is a point that Laura made. Because I think one thing that I hate to be so cynical in these, but people write blogs who don't know how to write a lot of the time, and they are unsurprised when the blogs aren't successful. You do need someone who can actually spring together some sentences and really, really convey a point. You also need, a lot of charities want people with thought leadership, someone who's actually going to teach you something, who's going to give you some awareness. Yeah. And then I think the place to actually start, once you've considered all these things, done a bit of research about your own capacity, your resources, your potential, is to then create content calendars. When we say content calendar, it doesn't have to be a really in-depth CRM type situation or even an Excel spreadsheet. It can just be a simple thing of like the rhythm of your publication schedules and some things that you consider publishing. So you think about what you're going to cover, think about the themes, and then put together an ideas document of some form. That can be on a written piece of paper, it can be on an Excel spreadsheet, it can be on a Word doc or a shared doc, ideally in the cloud, that other people in the charity can add to. And then just have all these ideas and think about which best apply to your audience and who's in the best position in your charity to write it. Marry those three things together, and then you have the first blog.
Yeah.
And then obviously from there, there's a lot more you do. And your first blog's never going to be that successful, or it's very unlikely it's going to be that successful. Blogs grow with time, with effort, with practice, but also with revisions based on your analytics. I really like what Ashley said about imagery. That's something definitely to consider, the way you're writing. And that feeds into tone of voice as well. Don't write super formally, I think you mentioned. Yeah. Don't write super formally if you are a charity that can, almost if your cause is not the most serious cause. Yeah. And that goes the other way, of course. If you're writing about something very serious, don't be like, hey, you know, like, it's, take it seriously. Mm-hmm. Can't believe I just said hey in that way.
Someone soundbited me, really.
But yeah, it's basically take your audience seriously and plan is what I'd say. To start, plan before you start actually writing.
Yeah, definitely. I think it all goes back to just kind of branding, and it's kind of thinking about who you are as a charity. That will really help you shape, especially what you want to write about, because there's so many avenues that you can pick. Depending on what kind of cause your charity kind of discusses. So yeah, definitely dig down and think deep about your brand identity. And a lot of the time as well, a lot of the kind of topics you probably want to cover are kind of probably what you talk about on a day-to-day. It could be behind the scenes what you do in a charity. Everyone wants to see what you do, like everyone wants to see things that they don't typically see. So that's always an interesting angle, or like even your day-to-day, kind of what you do with kind of volunteers, and just something different that, you know, you don't always get to hear about from a charity perspective.
One of the writing tips that I was given when I was younger was that to write down what you're saying to your friends, like what comes up as a conversation. And it doesn't have to be, it could be your colleagues, but it could be your friends when you're there like, how's work going? Here's your different projects and things that they're interested in, are likely to be other people are interested in. So you know, think about ideas in that way as well. And yeah, it all comes down to time and effort, I think. Just make sure you put time and effort into it. Writing is a skill, it takes a while. Like, you can't just put something out and hope it's gonna like do it. And if you choose like news content, do you have the time to reflect on all that, you know, all the new stuff, keep up with the news cycle? And not only that, things get outdated really quickly, so you probably want to try and make things a bit more
tough with capacity. You need to have someone reactive. I mean Charity Digital has two people dedicated entirely, or more or less entirely, to writing. And we would be unable to react quickly to news cycles, because there's so much news, for even in the niche that is the charity sector. In terms of the broad news, we couldn't react to that. So reacting to news in a blog is a very tough thing to do. And anyone who's ever written opinion pieces or blogs will know that, because your blog, if it's one day old, is basically pointless. So also consider that. I think if you're planning the news or news angle, you need someone dedicated and literally writing as the news comes out. There's obvious things you can do for that. So I would just Google RSS feeds. They're really effective. And then little things like starring all the websites that are going to give you the information you want and checking them on a daily basis is a really good place to start. There's a lot of caution around that, I'd say.
Yeah, I think you can also ask the audience directly for ideas. Like, if you're kind of trying to figure out where do I even start, like ask your audience what they actually want. Like, that's the main way that you're probably going to get the most engagement as well. Because if you're writing about what they want, they're going to want to read it. So asking whether you send out a survey with an email, or whether you talk to them on like social media, that would be really, really helpful, just to kind of get the kind of, that would get the conversation going in general anyway.
That's such a good point.
Yeah.
I guess everything you just said really kind of comes together into a blog content strategy, really. I think we covered all the bases there of the thinking about your audience, working out what you're going to write, what assets and media you might need, and asking your audience. Yeah, they all come together to form one of those, I think. So yeah, brilliant stuff, guys. All right, let's get down to the nitty gritty of it then. How should charities then write these blogs?
I can kick off with some technical stuff. I think HowStar we created in every organization I've worked in, always editorial or written content, is always had a HowStar. And those HowStars are differentiated massively from one that was essentially a book to one that was a page. And I think either works. It depends on your organization.
Sorry, just one thing. Do you want to explain what a HowStar is?
Sorry, a HowStar, also known as a style guide, is basically a list of instructions that charities or organizations can use to define the way their content is presented.
Can I give an example?
Laura's going to give an example.
So whether you want to use percentage signs or the word percentage, yep, or how you talk about money, how you put book titles in, things like that, whether you put it in italics.
And broader stuff such as, do you use the Oxford comma or don't you? Do you capitalize? So sentence case versus title case for titles. Title case would be capitalizing every word apart from very small words and conjunctives and so on. And sentence case would be just capitalizing the immediate first word of the sentence and then any other naturally capitalized stuff. But obviously there's no such thing as natural capitalization in terms of, like, there are certain things you should capitalize, but then there's massive debates. For example, job titles, I typically wouldn't capitalize content editor, but most people probably would. So you need to decide as an organization, and that could be one person deciding, or that could be a brainstorming between many people, stakeholders especially, about what you should do. But the one thing is, once you've consolidated that house style or style guide, you then all have to follow it. And that's a really tricky thing. So getting everyone to follow it. So it just basically ensures grammar and punctuation. And also worth mentioning that there's style guides available online, which you can freely access. The Guardian has a good one. The BBC has a good one. So you can just go to those style guides and use those. But I think that's your starting point. And then you can build that imagery, for example, that Ashley mentioned earlier. You can have an image guide, i.e. if you're using people, you want to ensure there's diversity. Maybe you don't want to use people. Charity Digital used to use people in our imagery. We don't anymore. We try and go minimalist, vibrant. And these are all things we decided as a team.
I will say our image style guide that we did for our website has really made a difference to the look of the site. And also, it's made it easier for me to know what I'm looking for. So it will help your team. It gives them a bit of clarity. And it also ensures a cohesiveness. Oh, my God, I'm using big words. And it's because I was talking about blogging and writing. I'm such an English student. So it brings it together, your website, a lot better. So don't discount imagery. And also, isn't there something to do with SEO and imagery?
Briefly, it basically is that you should actually label your images with keywords, not just label them thumbnail.
Yes.
No, it's true, you're right, because it also helps for other purposes like accessibility. So that's really a big thing. I think it was Twitter today that just kind of announced that they've got like a little kind of pop-up to remind people to add like the alt kind of description on images. So yeah, it's becoming more prevalent.
Yeah, no, I think you're totally right with that. Using the thumbnail one, I think, is a really good point about, not the thumbnail one, but you know what I mean, image, having the images with a proper word, some SEO words in there. Yeah, no, I think it was a brilliant example with the house style stuff, because I think that's something that people often forget, is like having a set of rules. But I think also something that we kind of forgot off that is that having that, it creates a sense of familiarity, which makes people feel even more comfortable with what they're reading, because they know what to expect. And even if it's on a wildly different topic, it still feels very comfortable. And I think it's a really nice thing. And all the best blogs I've kind of ever read or been a part of, the ones where their style is so special or unique or just consistent that you almost feel like slipping on a glove, but I hate that expression every time I read them. But yeah, no, I think there's some really good points in there.
Sorry, that's the difference between articles and blogging then, right? That's the point of a blog, is to be you and informal and have that familiarity. That's what gets people returning. They want to hear your voice and not, the Guardians.
It's trust again, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, they build trust in the website. They know if they return to you to talk about an issue that they're going to get high quality, good content that's consistent. I think the other ways I would say to ensure that voice is doing stuff like, I mean, the amount of people who publish stuff without editing is
oh gosh, is yes, a, please proofread.
Yeah, so proofread, edit if you can, and this may not be available because a lot of micro charities will be one person teams. But if you can, even ask a family member or a friend or someone else to read over your work before.
There'll always be something live. You've missed.
Yeah, we all do. Every single person. And me and Laura check each other's work before it goes live. We don't ever publish without a second pair of eyes.
Yeah.
So that's vitally important. And if you don't have that, one big tip is to read aloud. So read aloud to yourself. You'll hear the problems, whereas you don't read them.
Yes.
Yeah. So
I can also recommend Grammarly to people if they really don't have anybody else to read things.
And Hemingway, which isn't as good, I don't think.
Also not change ideal, the font. Sorry, Carol.
Sorry, I was going to say change the font of the article. Highlight everything. Change the font to a weird font. Read it back and you'll notice errors, because something in the way your eyes manage information when you write it down the first time, you the mistake slip, but you change it to a new font, it will appear new to you.
Wow, that's a good one. I'm going to do that. All right, so they've written a blog. It's really good, guys. The blog they've written is really good. But how do they make it great?
I can jump in, but I think data analytics is the place to start. We said earlier, you can track it one day, you can track it a week, and you can see the value you're bringing. I think if you've got a good blog, the value will become more clear. So the value that you're bringing to specific people will become more clear. And it's about understanding your audience and what value you're giving them, and then doubling down on that, essentially. So it's tracking success, finding weaknesses, double down on strength. Mm-hmm. And also, if you find weaknesses, don't do what a lot of people do and always try to improve them. I'm a massive fan of just getting rid of stuff if it doesn't work. Don't think that everything's going to work, that there's always a way of improving things. If something's unsuccessful, yes, there may be a way of improving it. Yes, those topics may be worth revisiting, but it's also highly possible that you might just want to avoid doing them in the future. And then other things like add a donation button, add a call to action. So at the bottom of every blog, if you can, get them to engage with other blogs, hyperlink and ensure that they're doing that. I mean, I see so many blogs that don't hyperlink to their own blog, even though they've got tons of brilliant content. Charity Digital, if you check out our content, you'll see hyperlinks showing you further places to go. You'll see webinars included, podcasts included. They give you more information on the topics you're trying to access. So yeah, I think it's really about just optimizing the content you already have once you've done great writing. You spend all this time doing great writing, and it takes about half an hour to an hour to really optimize it and make sure it's great. And people forget that step. They don't engage that step. And then they are somehow surprised when they can't seem to reach those new heights.
Yeah. I just want to take that back for a second, just because I think this will be useful for charities. We mentioned the tracking success and finding weaknesses, but what are the metrics, or what is success and what is weakness of a blog?
The metrics will depend on the charity and what they're trying to achieve. Mm. So for example, if it is reach, which often, let's be honest, it is, I think blogs are often trying to reach as many people as possible. Your metrics are page views and impressions. And if you have the ability to look at the amount of time people engage within the page, so scroll depth is a good indication. You can access that on Google Analytics. Every single website can access that on Google Analytics. Sorry, I need to breathe. Yeah. scroll depth is a really good one. Bounce rate is a really good one to see if people are coming onto your content and just going, okay, I don't engage with this. This isn't what I expected.
Yeah.
And again, organic search results, see how you're doing for SEO, which is a way of optimizing good content, is to make sure it's keyword efficient, that you've done the research on keywords and that you've included those and reputable links as well. So I take broadly, though, I would say impressions and consumed impressions, scroll depth are the big ones for most charities trying to improve reach. Beyond that, it will depend on each different goal of the charities, and then you need to dig deeper, and that will depend on individual charities. So it's not really worth us commenting on.
Yeah. Actually, I've read some of your blogs. They're pretty great. Can you give us the tips of how you made them great?
Oh gosh, you caught me off guard there. from the one that I recently wrote, the one that was for a mental health charity that I sit on a board for. So that was quite specific in that it was kind of me talking to kind of what it means to have early kind of signs of mental health struggle. So that was very specific. So in that sense, like with kind of, I feel like with mental health charities, typically it's kind of all about a storytelling, everyone being quite raw and honest, because we all kind of want to hear something that, you know, you might not hear your friends talk about. It's something that is like something, yeah, it's quite raw and honest. That's the main way I kind of can describe it. But yeah, that one was like I said, very specific, and it was tailored to me. So it was about my kind of story, but it also did have a CTA in it, where we kind of pointed at the fact that, you know, we are a charity that are trying to help people kind of notice these early signs of kind of a mental health struggle. So we point people towards kind of our services and how we can help them. I think making it, I don't know how I can say if it was great. I hope it was great. If it was received decently well on LinkedIn, but that's the only way I can kind of track it. I guess that's my tracking metric, that's the best. But yeah, I think making it great in a whole was, yeah, just being honest, being open. With the CTA, like you're saying, so important. Also, again, it kind of goes back to the audience with kind of points that we've kind of talked about before, is kind of how they think about how they might receive it.
I would think about how you behave with blogs as well. So look at all your favourite content people and look at people in the sector as well and how they're doing blogs. I think most charities have a blog section on their website. Obviously some of those will be bigger and have more resources or whatever, but this doesn't mean that it can't be done. I would say that make sure it's got value for your audience, but also like to the point of why are you writing it? What is the point of it? Make sure you know what you're actually saying, even if you have to boil that down to a little sentence while you're writing it. So then, you know, so it always comes back to that. Part of that getting the value from it is make sure that your audience can get it quickly, because that's also the point of a blog. It's meant to be a short form piece of writing for the whole and the behavior of your audience. Do they want that? Do they want to get things quickly? They probably do. They're on the internet. They've got a lot. So I would say that just make sure you know what you're saying. Make sure that your audience can get the gist of it quickly.
Yeah.
And generally just think about how you behave and what you would want from it.
Yeah, no, it's true. I think it's also, when I was thinking about this as well, a bit more what you kind of said, Laura, I feel like structure is quite a big thing.
Yes.
So how I was talking about telling a story. So when I was kind of writing my piece, it was kind of a sense that I was trying to think of my perspective, obviously because I'm writing it from my perspective, but I was also trying to think about, well, if someone doesn't know me, how are they going to kind of understand the story that I'm telling? So structure, and obviously that will come through planning, is like really important. Kind of keywords that will really, really help, like kind of buzzwords in the charity industry that will really, really help gain and garner attention on them. That's for like SEO purposes. Structure for sure.
Completely.
I think one thing we've touched on a little bit here is the sort of marketing side of things, but I think we could probably go into a little bit more depth. Is there anything we can do outside of SEO? Because I think we've discussed that quite a lot, but marketing wise that you could do to sort of really make your blogs as great as possible? And I think we've discussed this many times in the past. I'm going to go to you on this one.
Yeah. I mean, one thing is that the people who are sharing it and marketing it should be familiar with it. Mm. I think it's a thing we practice internally at Cherry Digital. Read the content you're sharing. It doesn't always happen. I think that's particularly aimed at larger organizations that tend to have a bit of a cold marketing strategy at times, where they sort of just reshare it and that's it. It's better if the person who's taking that piece of content from the writer is familiar with it in order to market it properly. It's a good point.
Well, you don't want to lose that personal element, do you? Exactly. That's the whole point. And actually, if Ashley wrote that like thoughtful piece of work on mental health and then someone just put like, then it's not her. That's the point of it.
Exactly.
So I think that personal touch matters. And for smaller charities, you'll retain that anyway. It's actually why a lot of small charity blogs are quite successful and actually hit home where the large charities don't.
Yeah.
It's actually a really important point that a small charity can compete with a major charity because they have that personal touch and because they're a lot more active in communities often than they have that more personal element within their work. So I think Ashley mentioned this right at the beginning, but in terms of marketing it, you are thinking about your users, you are thinking about who it's going towards, but you're also thinking about the actual people that it's going to reach and how it will help them. That should be the thought behind your marketing. So you're going, I want to reach these people because I know it will help them. So it's really about finessing that personal touch and making sure that the right people are reached by that.
I think anything I could definitely add on this one is that I always think that of all the marketing channels, I think social media is one of the best places to be sharing blogs because of, if depending on how you use them, I guess, but because they're personal platforms, really, that they are sometimes the best place to be posting them. I know that when I used to write a lot of them, I used to post some of them directly onto social media if they were short enough. I know that I used to have sort of on Instagram, I'd have sort of updates on my garden that I was having at the time, and I'd have an update of what was going on, and it sometimes would perform so much better there because it was a personal story that I was posting directly to a group of people that they could see then and there. But I think it's such a great place to start as a good place to really be pushing your blogs because people want to read things like that. Personal things do better on those platforms.
That's a really good point. I think you can use your blog in lots of different ways. You can put excerpts of it on Instagram or change up the way you say certain things on different platforms, and it'll still get the same, I don't know, a what's the word? I'm trying reach. To think effect.
Yeah. Yeah. You're giving people another outlet to read it as well.
Yeah.
So
and that's no bad thing.
It isn't a bad thing. However, I would say that you do have to focus on your goals. So if your goal is to draw more people to your website to donate, of course, actually, most social medias allow some form of donation, particularly if you get creative with it. So you could do that. And actually, it's a more immediate ask. But also, one thing that we learned a lot in our, we recently had a conference, and a lot of people would say the same point, which I think needs repeating, is you shouldn't be constantly asking people for money, or look, charities shouldn't be, you need content beyond that. Or you know, charities can constantly ask people for money. But what I mean is drawing people to your site, having them engage in your content or your blog is a great fundraising way, even if they haven't clicked on that instance, because they're aware of you, they know what you do, they see the effect you have in a community. They are far more likely in the future, if they're considering donation, they're going to go to you as opposed to other people. So don't always, the call to action is super important. It always should be there, and it doesn't necessarily need to be, not always be there, sorry, but it should be there a lot of the time, but it doesn't necessarily need to lead to donations. It can lead to other information, raising awareness, and the donation will come in good time, I think.
Yeah, I think it's also important to choose the right platform, because I know you kind of say you can post it on any platform, but the right platform could do wonders for you. Like LinkedIn for me now has become a bit like Facebook, in the sense that, you know, everyone's kind of sharing their personal story. I mean, LinkedIn is where I put my personal blog, so it just goes to show that it doesn't always have to be, you know, on your kind of what you would normally think to maybe put it on. Using something like LinkedIn, which seemingly could seem more professional, is actually becoming a bit more kind of a bit more open in general. So, that was the reason why I kind of put mine, because it's like mental health based on LinkedIn, because a lot of people nowadays on LinkedIn are talking about that. A lot of charities, a lot of organizations in general are talking about it. So, yeah, it just felt like the right platform.
That's a really good point. It's a really good point. Just one more question I have, really. I think that we kind of missed this one a little bit, is do you guys have a good place for people to start, or some recommendations or sort of sites that they could use for web for blogging?
I do. WordPress is pretty good. Is it good? Like, are we talking about sites as in...
Just if you're kicking off from the very beginning and you don't even really know what to do, are there any some good places to start?
Yeah, WordPress is great. It's very easy to use, and you can jazz it up a little bit, but it's if you really, really want to jazz it up, you probably need to know a bit of code. But they have a lot of templates, and it's very easy. I don't know, I used it when I first blogged, and it's just so easy. So I would recommend that. I also think if you wanted to, actually no, ignore that. I was going to say Tumblr. Don't do it.
That's a throwback.
Yeah.
I would say to build on Laura, agreed, WordPress. And also, if you look at the bottom of people's websites in the charity sector and beyond, you'll see who they're sponsored by or who they're powered by. And you'll see WordPress is a lot of them. Wix and Squarespace are good examples of it. Slightly more advanced than WordPress, but also not... in any sense.
Do they offer free options?
I think they offer free options, but again, you know, as with everything, for more advanced like functionality, you will have to pay. That's true of WordPress as well. I mean they have options for premium, but what I'd say is you don't, if you're a small charity, you don't need any of that, particularly if you're focused on primarily bringing people to a blog and having a couple of drop downs. That stuff is available free, and do not splash out on a really advanced, even minor spend on a really a sort of half advanced content management system and website, because it just isn't worth it, because the free options and the relatively cheap options can do a lot of the same things.
With obviously a few exceptions, I do think most bloggers will have started off with their .wordpress.com names. So I think that everyone will have started small, like even the ones that have like the one names that they pay for.
Obviously a lot of even slightly bigger charities will have their own dedicated space for a blog, or they can add them with relative ease. That's where it should go. Ideally it will be hosted on the charity site. I mean, that goes without saying, because but there are a lot of, I mean, Laura mentioned this earlier, I mean, if you want to see how blogs are done well, look in the charity section and see the ones that are getting the best engagement. Look at the big charities and see how they're doing it. Look at charities of your size and see the ones that are doing that very well. Learn from your community, and you can be the judge of who's doing well, but let the audience speak on that as well and see who's getting the most traction. And you can see that, I would say, by just diving into social media, really.
Brilliant. I think those are some good places for people to start. And I think we've given a lot of tools and expertise. You guys really are the A team. I'll tick that one off. But I think that's probably all we've got time for today. So thank you so much to everybody who's listened today. We really appreciate it. And we hope you have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.